Welcome to Brands and Campaigns, the stories and people behind clever marketing moves, powered by EKR. I'm your host, Camden Bernatz, Creative Director and Head of Brand Strategy at EKR. Welcome back to Brands and Campaigns. We're here with Corey Osler. Again, he's been on the podcast before, but it's been a little while. Art director and designer extraordinaire here at EKR. Corey, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
We've missed your wisdom and wit, and for those watching the video, good looks as well. No glasses today, though. He's contacts only for us, so we could see those beautiful eyes. Okay, with that weird intro, so Corey's here today to talk about our reaction and takeaways from the conversation previously with Jonathan Spaulding from Cornette and the A&W Free Root Beer campaign. Free root beer for centenarians, I should specify, not for everybody. There was a lot of good topics we talked about with Jonathan, and Corey and I have kind of reviewed that conversation. We're going to see what we can do as far as takeaways and what insights we might gain from that and any other follow-up things we want to chase that were started with Jonathan and his conversation. So again, Corey, thanks for being here. As you looked at this campaign, not only the conversation I have with Jonathan, but the work itself, what is there anything that kind of stood out as kind of a main takeaway or main thing you want to make sure we're talking about or learning about in this episode today?
One of the main things that stood out to me on this was sort of where the idea came from, and a concept that they have that, I mean, we do this at our agency, and I know other agencies have different philosophies on this, but it was an interesting take of, he mentioned that if you know the client, then you know the brief, basically, which, you know, I get what he's intuiting there. We sort of take that a different direction sometimes, or like, I guess, feel hampered by, you know, like, hey, like, I really need to get the main insights from, you know, either our research or the client themselves. And I'm assuming he still, you know, they still have like some research or main insights that someone's condensed down into something. But that was an interesting take of just like, hey, if you know this client and you know who they are, then you basically have your brief. And then the ideas stem from there. You don't need some special, specific insight. And so I thought it was interesting that they, you know, came up with this campaign mostly based on that of like, hey, we understand the personality of the brand. We know who they are. And in light of that, how are we going to celebrate, you know, maybe we can celebrate this milestone. And then in the goal of, you know, whatever the call to action was, which I think was a surprising twist of like signing people up for a rewards program or something, but also I assume general brand awareness and getting talked about. He mentioned a few times, like, if you're not getting it talked about, then own media wouldn't necessarily be considered successful. So that's kind of one of my main takeaways.
Yeah, good place to start. Let's talk about the brief for a minute. Cause yeah, what he mentioned stood out to me as well as being interesting. If you know the client, you know the brief. And I think I'm putting words in Jonathan's mouth a little bit here to extend that thought. But I think what he was probably referring to is when the personality and tone and like the branded element of executing on the brief. I think, yeah, if you know your client, you know how they sound, you know how they should come across, you know what's not on brand, what is on brand. What I would think maybe is not necessarily inherently known, even if you know the client really well, is the strategy portion of the brief. You need to decide what objective are we going after, or what does success look like, or why are we doing this campaign? And that would depend if it's like something the client is coming to you and saying, I need XYZ to happen, or if you're just pitching a new idea, hey, let's refresh next year's creative in some way. Here's a way we can do that. And I've kind of gone back and forth internally, and I'm curious if you have any insight on this, Corey. As I've tried to go back and forth on who should be basically putting together the brief, because I think it kind of depends, my current standing kind of depends on who is requesting the work or suggesting the work, I should say, where if we as an agency are working with a client and we say, hey, here's a great opportunity, we want to do this thing for this reason or to go after this market or to change this perception or whatever, and we're kind of presenting the strategy, we put the brief together and say, hey, client, how does this look? You good with this? We're going to execute on this. But sometimes the client will have a suggestion and say, I need these things to happen, and I wanted to do this thing and to go after this market or to reach this, to have this voice or whatever. And they kind of have a lot of the brief in place before, and it's our job to act on it. I guess the short answer, it should be collaborative, right? No one should just hand something over and not have a have some syncing on it. But what are your thoughts on that? Like who puts together the brief and what do you think about the strategy versus the brand personality element of it?
Yeah, as far as who puts it together, I mean, I would say it should be kind of a conglomeration of the client, whatever, whoever is leading the strategy. If there is, you know, some agencies have a dedicated strategist, and then consulting with the creative team just to make sure that they have the information that they need. But the, you know, if the creative team sometimes is on the strategy side of it, so they might have a little bit of input onto there. But ultimately, ideally, I guess we would say is if the client comes to an agency and says, I have this goal or this intention or this audience I want to address or market to, then they would have a little bit of insight into that, or they can just say, you know, and we don't have, you know, or tell us what they need from that. Like, and I need some insight into that. I don't know how to market to these people, so we need your suggestions there. So, like you said, sort of a collaboration between them and whoever's leading the strategy, as opposed to account managers. If they are involved in strategy to a degree, I would say that they could have input there, but that's more of like just basic information as opposed to like guiding the strategy itself. So, you know, they could gather stuff like, who is this client? What's their basic thing? But ultimately, their job is to be a liaison and not necessarily the one guiding that. At least, I don't know. Each agency does it differently, but like that's kind of the ideal in my understanding.
Yeah. So Jonathan was talking about how you don't necessarily, in this case with the A&W campaign and having worked with them, they didn't necessarily need a whole lot of hand-holding and showing what how to come across. And that, so like you said, if you know your brand, you know the brief. I think, yeah, again, I'm paraphrasing what I think he would mean by that, but it's, you know how to execute, but you still need to know what your strategy is. So still making a plug for the importance of making creative briefs, I guess I would say, is yes, know your, you know, live and breathe your client's personality and tone and brand and voice. But one, they may be new to you if it's a new account. Two, you may have a new person on the team who hasn't been that familiar with the brand. And like, it's, you know, a creative brief is still good. And so at least that's the hill I'm planting my flag on at this point.
Well, I think so too, because for a creative person, at least there's a double-edged sword to I think a lot of clients or even, you know, people on the account side sometimes think like, hey, you have complete creative freedom and that should be so refreshing to you. And it can be, but also without any parameters to work within, it actually is like a almost paralyzing task to attack of like, okay, literally anything can happen. But if I don't know, you know, if I don't have a goal in mind, then it's impossible to know whether I'm just doing something fun that I think is cool or whether it actually accomplishes anything. So I think as long as there's a goal and then a brand, that's bare minimum to know like, okay, so I can use my entire tool belt of creativity to try to accomplish, you know, this task or appeal to this audience. As long as I know that, I think, you know, a minimal brief is still acceptable.
And this is kind of slightly off topic, but thinking about creative briefs, this is my little it's not a rant. I'm not passionate about this, but just a little thought, I guess, for the industry is I think we need to be careful about not getting too focused on brand, that what we see as the brand gets too narrowed down to one specific thing or one specific trait. Yes, you should have kind of home base when it comes to your tone and personality, your visual style, the messages. I work on brands, right? I'm all for having consistent branding, but you should be flexible and nimble and human as a brand to where there may be a situation that you do something that's different than what you've been doing and doesn't necessarily go against the brand, quote unquote, or break the brand to where, I mean, this is a random on the spot example. I don't know if this is the best example or not, but that's what I thought of first. One of the most talked about, you know, brand tones and voice was like Wendy's and their Twitter, right? And they would roast people on Twitter. That was happening for a while and that got a lot of buzz. I don't think Wendy's thinks, okay, every single piece of creative we have to come out now has to be snarky and roasting people and kind of that, you know, sarcastic or passive aggressive, because you lay it on too thick, it gets too old. Or vice versa, you don't have, if your brand is not that way, it doesn't mean you can never be funny or never do something that is. And so it takes skill and knowing the brand. And I guess my soapbox is over. You can respond to this if you have anything, or you can move on. But just to summarize that, like, have your home base, have your brand figured out, but have it be understand how am I going to react to different things in the moment? How are we going to sound when we're happy, when something bad happens, when we're responding to something local versus global? Like, you need to, if your brand is good, if your brand strategy is good, it should be flexible enough that you can bend without breaking, if that makes sense, your brand. Easier said than done, but that's my little soapbox moment on brand strategy.
Well, I think you have a good example there in like a Wendy's, for example, because you're right. Not all their advertising is like as snarky as what they might perform on Twitter. And I think they did do a few things like that on Twitter where it was pretty consistent. Like, hey, this is our voice on Twitter. We're going to be, you know, this snarky kind of roast, but tongue in cheek type of brand, as opposed to like, they also have ads that are, you know, appeal to a different audience. And so as with everything, as long as you know who you're appealing to, and it's not just a mystery. I mean, not that you can't take a creative risk now and then, but like, as long as you kind of know what you're doing there, I think that's okay. Also, that made me think of sort of I don't have the exact quote, but the idea of like what Picasso did. He's, you know, famous for his cubism, like really out there, avant-garde almost art style that really pushed things when in his generation. But like, the guy knew how to paint photorealistically. He knew all the rules. He knew what generally was accepted out there in art, but he said, you know what, I'm gonna stand out from that. And you know, that's maybe not exactly a one-to-one comparison, because you could say, well, that became his brand and he was out there doing that. But I think you can even do that within your own brand and be like, hey, like, normally we're going to be like this, but we know the rules. We know that this is not the norm. And so as long as you're aware, like, as long as you know the rules that you're breaking and why you're breaking them, I think that's a good, you know, it's a way to stand out, or at least break it up. Cause like, yeah, if a super serious brand is suddenly making like a really tongue in cheek ad, like, it is going to stand out. You just want to make sure that,
yeah,
you know, that you're doing that with the full knowledge of like, I know the kind of reaction this is going to get, and that's what I want.
Your brand is what you're most consistent about. No one specific piece of creative or an ad or a billboard or a promotion is going to be defining of your brand. It's what you do. It's what home base is, right? And so you might try different things and say, hey, that worked really well. Let's do more of that. And over time, that becomes a core aspect of your brand or something you adapt into. But you've got to be flexible. So, okay, good stuff on that. Let's talk about the A&W, the creative specific. Obviously, some humorous kind of unexpected settings for these elderly people you don't usually see wearing these, you know, silly sunglasses, partying in them with balloons and music in a restaurant and whatnot. One thing that stood out, nothing related to branding necessarily, but I thought about, is what a stereotypical old person is changes generationally, right? Like, to us, it's kind of funny to see this older guy saying, oh, it's root beer is gas. And you know, the what's her name? Batty Winkle, the older female, that's the influencer, you know, calling herself a baddie. Like, that's kind of funny. But that's how youth talk. Like, 100 years from now, old guys saying that something is gas is not going to be funny. That's just how they talk. And they'll have like gauged ears and tattoos and like, you know, the things that you don't see in old people, that our generation looks at old people. When we're old people or younger than us or old people, it's going to change, right? Unless, do you magically just like start wearing old sweaters and having your hair a certain style and like when you get old? Or is that, am I right in thinking that old people are going to look different 100 years from now?
No, I think you're right. Cause I hear stories about like my grandparents and stuff like that. And I'm sure, you know, maybe there was more consistency up until like now that my parents are grandparents and getting there. Like, they don't look like my grandparents did. They're different. Like, yeah, what am I going to be like then? Like, not that I have a bunch of tattoos and stuff, but a lot of people in my generation do. So that would be interesting to see. But I think that is another example of like, again, knowing, you know, what it is that they're appealing to. So it's like, yeah, old people don't do this normally. And so that's why like, hey, this stands out. Cause like, it is like, it's humorous and we know who we're appealing to. Cause like, we're probably, as at least what he was saying, like, you know, the target audience probably wasn't 100-year-old plus people, even though that's who they're sort of promoting to. It is still a younger audience. And they're like, how do you appeal to them? Like, take this thing that doesn't normally appeal to them and have it appeal to them. And just something cool of like, hey, it's been around a long time.
Yep. Yeah, it bless their hearts. I talked to Jonathan about how many cuts are in this video. You can tell they weren't delivering long, full lines. It was like a couple words cut. I just imagine that getting, you know, memorizing scripts and getting this young person lingo out and stuff probably took some multiple takes, but that's part of the fun. And they've earned it. They don't need to be, you know, perfect with their scripts. They just get free root beer. What do you feel like? And I talked to Jonathan about this in our conversation. I want to know what your take is. There is potentially, and I don't feel this is a problem, but just playing devil's advocate, there could be, as you were getting this worked on and approved behind the scenes before it launched, there could be a fear that, like, is it kind of being insensitive that we're saying, oh, once you get 100 years old, you get free root beer for life, implying that it's kind of funny because there isn't much of your life left. Like, it's like hardly anybody lives that long. And if they do, they don't have much time left. That could be seen as like in poor taste. I don't think it is. But like, what's, I don't know, do you agree with that? Or what's your reaction to that move?
Yeah, I have, you know, I'm not like a stand-up comedian or something, but I have, like, you know, read about comedy and, like, as opposed to, you know, like, whoa. And in light of like advertising, like, okay, well, it's when some, like, it has to be edgy in order to get attention, because if it's just boring, you blend in, but you don't want to go over the top where it's like, well, now it's offensive. So it is a difficult line to skirt that. But I think at least the way that the comedy that I like is, it's something that maybe no one is going to, you know, point out in just a normal conversation. And like, maybe it could be rude if you like said something like that, but everyone knows, like, it's a fact. It's not like you're saying like, and you know, something offensive about old people, but you are saying, like, we all know that this is a fact. The old people know that, you know, older people know this is a fact. And so just kind of pointing it out tongue in cheek like that is like, you know, someone could always be offended by anything that you do, even like something way tamer than this.
Yeah.
But if like he said, if your goal is to make people talk about it and to stand out, like, you are going to have to run that risk just a little bit.
I think it needs follow-up content. I don't know what their plans are, but I feel like, because we talked about if centenarians are not necessarily the main target, because one, there aren't that many of them, and two, it's not like they're out there driving a lot of conversation and social media and whatnot about anything that's happening in marketing or in brands. You've got to keep it relevant. What I'm saying is, they're not going to be redeeming this deal in mass numbers that it keeps it active. Like, when back when McDonald's had like their monopoly, remember when you could play McDonald's Monopoly? That was so prominent across every McDonald's experience during that time that everyone knew about it. You didn't have to necessarily keep promoting it and talking about it. This is something that if you want people to like to have this go and have legs to be long reaching, you need more content that's kind of funny about older people redeeming this or looking forward to this, like when they turn 100, or like, and I guess maybe one point against what I'm saying is, we talked about consistency and branding, but they didn't want to be just the old person brand, I guess. Maybe that would be a reason not to do too much of this, is if it's like, oh, I only ever see old people associate with A&W, it's the grandma and grandpa brand. Maybe that's a reason not to. I'm having a battle with myself in real time on this podcast, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, and I've thought about that too. I'm like, because they're not necessarily appealing to old people, but they are, like, the reason they use old people is to appeal to whatever their audience is with the fact that, hey, we've been around a really long time. So, like, we're mm-hmm. celebrating that in a fun kind of tongue-in-cheek way. So, like, you know, even if it does have the residual effect of like, hey, I can't wait till I'm 100 so I can get free root beer for life. Like, that wasn't the goal of that. The goal was just to be like, hey, like,
that's true.
At least in my understanding of like, hey, like, maybe you haven't, like, this is a nostalgic brand. He mentioned that several times, because like the type of food that they have there, the stuff, like, it is kind of old Americana type of food. Like, people still like it, but like, you know, the average person probably is like, I just want to go get a burger and I want to get some French fries. Like, they're not that. They are still like, you know, get some fried chicken, get some whatever. I can't remember what else he said, but it was like some stuff that you just don't get anywhere else. And so taking that uniqueness of the brand and then leaning into it, but still using the lingo from the younger audience, I think they still are saying, hey, we're nostalgic and you know who we are, but we're still relevant to you as the youth, or whoever it is that they're appealing to. So
the youth.
Maybe I'm an old man now.
Well, no, it's like, it's funny because nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely a correct statement to say, but just saying the youth makes you inherently sound like an old, like, not, you're not the youth if you're saying the youth.
I'm no longer a youth.
Yeah, that's funny. I guess what I'm saying is, I just feel like I think I've come over to the side of like, okay, never mind. It doesn't need to necessarily be this ongoing thing, because it was this kind of, they're over 100 years old as a company, just kind of showing that nostalgic. It's a fun one off. But I guess what I'm saying is, I would be bummed, or I feel like it'd be a miss, if like 10 years from now, there's people who are turning 100 that are not knowing and redeeming this deal. If they're serious about actually making this a thing, it's not just a funny joke, but like, you can actually get free root beer once you're 100 years old. If people are not actually doing that, they're missing out on that. Not that that's going to be your entire brand or totally change your bottom line of getting attention and whatnot, but imagine if that actually was a thing in pop culture and the zeitgeist and just the communal knowledge. Oh, hey, you're 100. Hey, have you gone to A&W recently? Like, it's just something that we associate with turning 100 years old. There's an opportunity. No, there's not many things like that. It's the forgotten generation and things like that you talked about. I would love to have that be one of the things. Again, love for them, I guess I should say, that becomes one of the things that when someone turns 100, besides, wow, congratulations, you lived a good life, blah, 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 it's also, oh, don't forget, you're eligible for the A&W deal now. That needs to be in people's minds for that to happen, and this could easily just be forgotten if there's no kind of follow-up on it.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that, like, I haven't researched to know if they are doing follow-up stuff, but, like, I was thinking, like, truly the full realization of this campaign would be if it did enter into like a public consciousness or like kind of a meme of like what turning 100 is. It's like, hey, like associate this with that. Cause like anytime I've seen like someone's grandparents or great grandparents are turning 100 on like Facebook or something, they make a big deal of it. It is a big deal. Cause like, you know, it is sort of a rarity just based on the statistical life expectancy of the average person. And so why not capitalize on that and sort of like, you know, anytime someone turns 100, it's like hashtag going to A&W now for my free root beer. Like that, like you said, that has legs that could last a long time.
They need to connect with like the government or insurance and stuff. Like everyone knows about AARP. You get that letter in the mail, and they know how old you are. And that's something I'm not even close to that, but I know that's like a thing. Like, oh no, I've got the AARP letter in the mail. That means I feel like I'm getting old. That's a cultural awareness thing. It's not fun like free root beer, but if there was something that like, yeah, somehow people just could get reminded like this, oh, I got the A&W reminder in the mail. My birthday's next month. I don't know.
Well, they might do it too. Cause like if you, for this, they're signing up for a rewards program. Lots of restaurants have that. So it's, you know, every year for your birthday, like if they want to really own it, be like, hey, only 62 more years until you're eligible for our free
root beer.
Just wanted to remind you.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Cause obviously it's like, if you're old, it's like, whatever. It's just, you know, you get it, start using it. But yeah, if you like right now, it has like some countdown, but it's like 70 years until you get free root beer. And who knows?
All that. And then that's just, yeah, that just keeps you top of mind. And like, that's what this type of branding is all about. It's like, hey, next time I go to eat somewhere, like that's now entered into my mind. Whereas like, maybe I'd be like, oh, I got McDonald's, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A. Oh, and now I have, you know, A&W, KFC.
Yeah. It'd be cool too if like, again, this is probably more data and technology than is worthwhile, but just it'd be fun too if it like tracked how many different root beers you had over time. So by the time you get to 100, it's like you've had 7,000 root beers and now you get them free for life, or I don't know, fun stuff.
Try to get that many free ones, yeah.
Cool. Okay, this has been an interesting campaign to talk about. Anything else I've kind of led us in a few different weird directions. Do you have anything that stood out as far as the craft, the execution, anything from someone who does this kind of stuff for clients, anything that you want to talk about?
Just like I said, I think for me, it's always interesting when I hear these type of things, that just the creative brainstorm process that they, you know, arrived at this through. And he did detail that out of just like, hey, well, this is a big milestone. How can we celebrate this? Instead of just putting like, hey, 100 years, yay. Like, they're like, no, let's do something that's going to get some attention. And they knew that, you know, as an own media type campaign, it runs the risk of like not, it has to be interesting enough that, you know, a news outlet would be interesting enough that they would pick it up of their own accord. And so, you know, you can send out press releases and stuff. But I think knowing that is the goal and like how they came up with something like that is very interesting, because that is sort of a hard execution to do. Like, hey, let's appeal to like something like, cause that is a funny news story. If I saw that headline, I'm like, oh yeah, that'd be something I'd read about. And so, you know, press people know that, and they, you know, as long as a war didn't start that day, that's something that could get picked up. And then craft wise, I guess I've been a part of a few video shoots, and, you know, knowing how to deal with talent and costumes, and this would be an special a unique challenge, I suppose, as far as that type of thing goes. But it's interesting just to, you know, the camera style that they chose and like the types of colors that they went with to try to make it pop on screen, but it still meld with what the brand is and stuff like that. So all those little creative decisions like that are always interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah. They shot it vertical for social, clearly had social usage in mind, mobile usage in mind. And that's something that's nice if you can Not that you have to just do one. You can have multiple different cuts of the same creative, but this one clearly was from the beginning. They knew they were going to run it on mobile. I can tell.
I will say that is something that, you know, I mean, maybe most places do this well, but that's something that hopefully everyone can kind of navigate towards, is knowing that whatever the end result is going to be should affect the shot process. Because as a creative, if you shoot something kind of wide, that's like, it works well in that one format, and then you try to go edit it to vertical video, you're like, oh, that doesn't work at all. So I think now that the world kind of lives on social media, that is going to affect the way that we like frame basic shots and stuff like that. So that's an interesting.
Thing. You just made me think of something. This is my last little bit that I have to add, but you just made me think about this. And maybe there's a whole other episode we could talk about this, but I've been really like assessing, I've been like micro assessing video ads recently, because having been in for our team, I've been working on a few different video ads for clients, and I've been thinking about finding the balance of pre-planning your shots versus gathering a bunch of stuff and putting it together. And I don't mean just like B-roll, but I mean like, for example, it's the Olympics happening when we're recording this, and there's lots of different, you know, sports related ads people are putting out. And some of these ads have a bunch kind of montage of people doing like different sport things that as someone has a voiceover or something like that. And they're really cool shots, dramatic, good angles, good lighting, and that's just an example. It's not only a sports thing, but for example, these sports ads, I'm like, okay, I'm guessing that specific 2-second clip before it changes to the next 2-second clip probably wasn't pre-storyboarded out. Like, it has to do this person running and jumping in this angle, and then someone else is going to be throwing overhand. They probably gathered a bunch of people doing different things sports related. Hey, I want you to run. Now do this. Now jump over this hurdle, and you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the editing process came together and made it fit good. And that makes sense in some context, I feel like, because you don't want to stick yourself to saying it has to be this when you might get a really good shot of something else that happens that you want to put in. But on the other side of that coin, you don't want to go in there with no plan and just hope you just, you know, have some random B-roll that doesn't fit with like the timing, the music, the message that turned. Anyway, so I'm getting really in the weeds here, but I've been really fascinated lately with like, how much do you pre-plan shot direction before you go out there? And the answer might be, like I said about the other question I asked, it might just be, it depends. But any wisdom to give to me as I keep thinking about this that you should send me off with?
It depends. And the thing that it depends on is how, like with that type of thing, let's say, I would imagine that they did have like a storyboard to go along with and the basic, you know, idea of like some angles and some shots on this. So they probably took multiple angles of different shots and then... Mm-hmm. In the end, because like the lighting, especially in those sports things, is very, very studio controlled. Like it's not like you don't get dramatic lighting just because, right? Unless you're outdoors at the right time. So that's all very pre-planned. And then I would imagine, like you said, they take several takes of something and then they edit that together, knowing, you know, like here's what we thought would work. And they look back at it and they're like, let's try this. And then in the end, it might not be the same. But one of my favorite things to do, like if they have it available in like movies or cartoons even or stuff like that, it's just like sometimes they have a side by side of like the storyboard and then the actual movie next to it to try to see how it is. And like, it's pretty cool. Like some of them stick really close to it and then some are just like completely different. And you're like, oh, I can kind of see why they did that. Mm-hmm. So yes, it depends. But also generally speaking, if it's going to be anything that needs like, if it's, you know, unless your style is 100% candid and it needs to look, you know, authentic, or you're like, you know, shooting news reel or something like that of an actual event, I think there is always at least some storyboarding or at least shot list planning that goes into it. Just otherwise you could waste a lot of time on the set.
Oh yeah. You definitely should have some kind of, you shouldn't go in there totally blind. I've just been impressed lately with some of these ads I've been seeing that just capture some moments of things that just seem so like, and again, I'm assuming, but it seems kind of natural. And like that, how would you, that seems so natural and unscripted, that motion or that facial reaction or that thing, that I'm like, how, even if I had that in my mind, I knew I wanted exactly that shot, I'm not sure how I'd even describe it to the client to get it approved and to the actors to do it. You'd have to just have it happen naturally. And so I've just been fascinated with some of the stuff I've been seeing lately. And anyways, something just trying to get better at is not overcooking it before it gets made, but also having some kind of a plan that you're not going in blind. And that's the challenge and the balance.
Yeah. And with athletic stuff, especially, I think that you're right. That's the perfect blend of both. Cause like you can't, it's not acting to do, I mean, it kind of is, but like, you know, if you're going to be my, like, cause I don't know which one you're referring to, but I have in mind, like there's an ad that had Michael Phelps in it from like a few Olympics ago. I'm like, yeah, you can't tell him like, do this really dramatic breaststroke or something. Like you could tell him to like ham it up a little bit, but like you set up the environment to capture whatever's about to happen. And so as long as I have multiple cameras ready, it's like, okay, do your thing like three or four times and then we'll get the shot from that. But like, you know, you're about to do something that like you can't act. It has to be natural or spontaneous.
Yeah. Well said. I guess it goes as a props to good editors. Editing sometimes it's not just taking things and putting them in the right order or just laying a music track over it. But sometimes in the editing process, you've got to make creative decisions and work with, you know, your client, your director, your creative director, whoever's on the project to say, you know, we're still building this in the editing phase. It's not just piecing together all the pieces we already knew we wanted, which is, I guess, not news to people in the industry, but just a good reminder sometimes is, creativity and inspiration come from in that stage of the process, even after all the shooting, all the filming has been done. So yeah, props to editors.
Good insight.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Corey, for joining us today. I know you've been on before, but for those who maybe haven't heard your previous episode, where can people either get in touch with you or find what you're up to? Where should we send them for that?
Yeah, I have a website. It's just coreyosler.com. I have, you know, the EKR website is also where I work for. So if you want to, you know, get in contact with us and have probably me working on your account, then also get in contact with them. And I think those are probably the main ones.
Yeah. I follow his stuff. Corey's got good, not just thought leadership stuff from his brain, but he puts out good work as well for if you need some inspiration on what you could be creating as a designer and art director. And so, yeah, as Corey mentioned, we both do this stuff. We work at EKR. We love working on the brand building for clients as well as then execution on creative, campaigns or one-offs or whatever needs to happen to get those brands into the world. So if you've been listening to us and looking for someone to partner with, or you know somebody in mind who needs some of these services, whatever it might be, we would love the opportunity to see if we can be a good fit and help in whatever creative capacity, you might need. And for those who have any questions or recommendations for us on who we should interview next, you can reach out to us at brandspodcast@ekragency.com. And if nothing else, we encourage you to follow the podcast, subscribe if you haven't, and give us a review as well. That helps us a lot. We, of course, love 5-star reviews. Those are great. But even if it's not a full 5 stars, getting reviews helps us. If it's going to be a 1, maybe reach out and let us know. We can improve. We don't want to see those ones if we can help it. But anyways, we just want reviews and to know how we're doing, how we can get better. So appreciate your time as listeners. Appreciate your time, Corey. Stay tuned for more content on brands and campaigns.